Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. You can listen to The Mike O'Mara Show at MikeO'MaraShow.com.
Well, what have we here?
It's a podcast.
Fine.
And what excitement we have today.
It's The Mike O'Mara Show with Mike O'Mara and Rob Spiewak. And now, here's Rob.
Hey, it's me. And Mike is not here today. As you know, he's on vacay, but sitting in with me, this is going to be fun. Good buddy of mine. Who, you know, I don't know that we've been in the physical presence of each other since 1993, but he holds a certain honorable space in my heart because there is existent two pictures from my college graduation, and he is in one of them. It was before smartphones. We didn't take thousands of pictures. We didn't have the Starburst thing where you hit it and there was 50,000 pictures. All there are two pictures of me, one walking the stage and one with all the wonderful and exciting graduates of class of 1993 at Virginia Commonwealth University. Say hi to Aaron Perlett, who is joining me today from St. Louis. Aaron, good to see you. How are you?
Hey, Rob. It's great to see you, man.
This is going to be fun because when I knew you in college, I didn't know you to be a particularly musical guy. Now, I mean, we all liked our music, but it was in the middle of the worst musical decade in the era of pop music, the 1990s. So, and I was for a while playing records on the radio down there until Robert Fleskus fired me. And that was a whole grudge thing, and we can get into that if you like. But I know the name Fleskus will come up. I didn't feel that you were all that musical, and now you have released an album, and you have a single. You're part of a band called Atomic Junk Shot. How did this happen? Were you musical in college? Did I miss it?
You did not miss it. I was busy wasting my life away with with booze and more booze.
Yes.
And not showing up to at least 50% of my morning classes.
It seems to me a lot of our communications classes were afternoon or later. That made it easier.
That did make it much, much easier.
Because I remember you being at those. But the morning classes, yeah, they get a little tough. So you were wasting your way in Margaritaville down there in Richmond. And
yeah.
When did the music start? When did you find it?
Yeah, I actually took to music pretty late in life. I have two children, and I spent 10 years watching them take piano lessons, knowing that I had a guitar in my basement, and it was really pissing me off. And I have always been really passionate about music since I was a kid.
Right.
Even though I did not grow up in a very musical household at all.
Uh-huh.
I kind of discovered it on my own and really got into things like Eric Clapton and kind of 70s country and the Stones. And I mean, actually the Tattoo You album kind of changed my life.
Great album. And it's kind of funny that you would mention, there's Josh. Hi, Josh.
Hey, how's it going?
This is Aaron.
Nice to meet you.
Looking well, Josh.
So the Rolling Stones, it's funny when you mention rock and country. Through the 70s and into the 80s, the Stones always dropped at least one country sounding song on their albums. And I think they had a definite appreciation for it. I saw some definite Stones influence on this new album. But you say Tattoo You was the one, and that's one that is a sort of decidedly not country.
It's not. And, you know, you and I were probably about 10 when that came out, maybe 9.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing, you know, that terrible video for Start Me Up where they're like in a photography studio with nothing behind them. And
my favorite part about that is when Mick gets particularly Mickey and they show Charlie and he looks embarrassed.
Yeah.
I always feel that Charlie Watts was embarrassed for what Mick Jagger was doing in that video.
Yeah. Well, but that song, though, it just I was like, what is this? And mm-hmm. Like I said, we never really had music on in my house, and it made me want to go like find out about the Stones and everybody else. And and then also when I was 16, I inherited one of the worst automobiles on the planet, a 1977 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser that my parents were too cheap to get the wood paneling for or the roof rack. But we did have an antenna that was embedded in the windshield.
I remember the technology on that. And that's a station wagon for those of you under the age of 50.
Yeah. And it was orange. It was pumpkin orange.
Why would anyone buy or make an orange car? That's horrible.
I have no idea. But the only channel I can get in, and you will understand this, was WMZQ.
Yeah.
The AM, their AM dial.
They AM the AM sister, because they were 98.7, I think. But
yep.
On the AM, I think the AM was more windshield friendly, wasn't it?
It was more windshield friendly. In fact, it would say, dial windshield friendly. Here's your AM dial for WMZQ. But, you know, it introduced me to what is kind of now thought of as the outlaw brand
right.
of country.
Yeah.
Because that was that era of, that was in the 80s, but it was... They were still playing a lot of like George Jones and Waylon Jennings and things like that. And so between the rock and roll I was buying and the kind of outlaw country I was listening to.
Seeping in, yeah.
Yeah, it really kind of formed my worldview. So, but to jump forward to your initial question.
Sure.
So I had always wanted to play guitar and I had always wanted to be in band. It had just been that, you know, that dream.
Yeah.
So after, you know, watching my kids get piano lessons, one day I decided to ask their teacher. I said, hey, do you teach guitar too? And he said, you know, I just hired a guy to do that. That was 7 years ago in April. And within 9 months, I was composing music. And then that was probably around 2024 now. So that was 2017.
Right.
So 2018... I tend to get way ahead of my skis and,
yeah.
I put a band together and we were terrible. We were genuinely terrible. And
was that the objective when you selected your roster?
Well, you know, no, cause actually what I've always done is surrounded myself with people that are much, much better than me.
Smart.
But I was the front man and
sure.
I had never sung before and I was a terrible guitarist. And
did it start always with you as the singer? Did you have to be the singer? Was that the rule?
It wasn't that I had to be. It was the people that I guess it just kind of it just organically became that because I was writing the songs too.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so insecure about my abilities to play music that when I initially did it, I started writing things in the same kind of nature of Tenacious D or Wheeler Walker Jr. They mm-hmm. were incredibly off color.
Yeah.
Because I felt like, hey, if I distract you with something that's ridiculously funny or a way off color, then maybe you won't notice what a terrible musician I am.
Understood. Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know if I really accomplished that, but
when I listened to the first single, it is lyrically dense. It tells a great story. It paints a wonderful picture with the words. And since we were both communications majors, ostensibly, we had to focus on our writing. So even though I assume that even self-proclaimed, you'll say you've improved as a musician, right?
Definitely improved as a musician. The lyric writing has, because of what you just mentioned, I've been a writer all my life.
Right.
It's never writing lyrics, just having to pivot into rhyming them has never been difficult. Composition and being able to play that composition well, that was really the learning curve for me. But you're right. I do tend to write very wordy, kind of sarcastic.
It's got a great narrative. It's got a great flavor. Let's tease this record here. And I have to ask a question. It's so funny. Of our entire graduating class of broadcasters in 1993 at VCU, I'm one of the few that have actually stayed in the broadcasting track. I was thinking about it last night. Dave Ross does sports still. But can you think of anyone that has stayed in the radio track? I can't. And you abandoned us early on, you jerk.
I did 2 years of TV and then I was done because I just wanted to bang myself over the head with a brick from staying in television.
You know what? I should mention this for our DC listeners. You had a very legendary internship. You worked with Glenn Brenner, right?
I did work with Glenn Brenner. He was my absolute idol.
And it represented a different era of television. I can see someone who interned with Glenn Brenner thinking TV would be the way to go.
Yeah, weenie of the week. Unfortunately, yeah, it was. You know, when you're a young kid and you're working an internship in a big market, you really don't get to do a whole lot. But then I started working at the CBS affiliate in Richmond, Virginia, and I actually was able to do almost everything. And you know, I probably learned.
Is that
more
where Fran Tarkenton's brother worked?
Chip was actually at the ABC affiliate.
Okay, forgive me.
I think it was W Poo, something like that. WPO.
Yeah, they were all their proud slogan. We're number two.
Yeah.
So, Richmond is a funny little TV market because the same people were there forever. And so you got in and you were able to do some stuff there. Yeah.
Yeah. I was able to edit, put packages together. I was in the field with the reporters. So it was a great learning experience. I probably learned more doing that about what I thought I was going to do than I did in our delightful classes.
Well, the classes weren't anything. I mean, they taught you the rudiments, and bless their hearts, I still love our teachers that we had, but they didn't prepare us for what was happening. For one thing, the whole industry was crumbling under our feet as we were going to school. So I don't fault you for getting out of it. I landed in a lucky place several times and I get to still do it, which is cool. But I talk so much. The reason I ask is, have you ever had anybody play your record, which is called Dirt Roads, out of a jingle, like on a radio station?
Not yet. No.
Okay. Today it happens. Today it happens. Here is a atomic junk shot with Dirt Roads.
The Mike O'Mara Show, TMOS.
Pretty great, huh?
Oh, that's awesome.
You mentioned a very obscure, well, not very obscure, but I think obscure to people of today, artist, when you were describing some of your styles. You mentioned Tony Joe White, and I feel it on this. As an Elvis fan, he's important because Elvis did Hoax Salad Annie as a big number live. And that was, of course, Tony Joe's big hit, including the great lyric, Chomp Chomp. But this is Dirt Roads. Now, you're playing rhythm guitar on this?
Yeah.
You can't compose on rhythm guitar, can you?
I compose everything on rhythm guitar.
Really? I would think... Okay, well, let's listen to it.
Head to the lake for a couple of days. See trailers and dogs with just three legs. Lots of folks walking on by. Drinking 40s and all hazy-eyed. Handicapped scooters, they're riding around.
I have a lot of questions. It's probably my favorite pop-sounding record I've ever heard that rhymes with Mr. Pibb. I thought that was very, very clever. But was it inspired? You mentioned it's mentioned in the press release. It was inspired by the show Ozark, or was that just a coincidence?
So it was basically kind of bringing that to life. But where it came from specifically was that my wife and I spent 6 years looking for a place on the water, whether it's a piece of land or a house.
Right.
Some of that time, because we live between St. Louis and a place in Southern Missouri on the water, we spent at Lake of the Ozarks looking for places. And one day I turned to her as we're driving down a dirt road. And I said, you know, all I'm really seeing here is dirt roads, meth shacks and graveyards.
Okay.
And we were coming up on properties that had, like, you'd have a nice house, and then 100 yards away, you'd have a house that was on a corner that had literally 100 washer, dryers, and stoves stacked on top of it.
Yeah, it's a very integrated neighborhood. All times.
It is. And, it's a little bit, obviously there's some sarcasm in the lyrics, but
sure.
A lot of this I was just bringing to life what my wife and I were seeing, which was kind of reflective of what was demonstrated in that show Ozarks, that it was this drug ridden area, which even though it was filmed in Georgia.
Yeah. Well, everything's filmed in Georgia now, including Family Feud, you know, Family Feud. Also, if you go outside the studio, lots of meth heads. It just happens.
But great mustaches.
Great mustaches. Now, let's take a small detour here. Because I did some work here, and I looked on your Facebook page on your work history. And I think you have one of the most delightful descriptions of a work history of anyone I've ever read. But also, I was a little bothered. Why didn't you mention to me that you you got your master's in London?
Yeah, I do have an MBA that I
That's just... crazy. You go from a school that is literally a punchline, VCU, to London and get your master's degree. What happened to you?
Well, you know, the University of East London, they had a mascot and West London didn't. So I was like, screw West London. I'm going to East London.
Was it a rotten tooth? What was the mascot?
It was a rotten set of teeth.
Oh, okay. The whole set. Of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you started, it says here, if we go from the bottom up, former media relations manager at Progress Energy Incorporated. What was that?
Yes, that was it's a big energy company, now Duke Energy.
Okay, very good. That was my old DJ name. This one I love, and I remember this, you doing a lot of social media. You were the former, and I'm so sad you stepped down, the former chairman at the American Mustache Institute.
The bravest organization in the history of mankind. Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Well, you do have some familiarity about it with it, but honestly, if you look, Josh is wearing a beard right now.
Yes.
If the American Mustache Institute had not existed, Josh would not be legally allowed to do that in 47 states.
Is that true?
It is true, as far as you know.
As far as I know.
Yeah.
So they still do. I know you did some charity work with the American Mustache Institute. And I think I just trimmed, but I could be an honorary member, I think. And then
especially
I think
with those eyebrows.
Stop it, Josh. There's no need to call. But you see. All right.
You switch glasses. It brings them out.
I trimmed them and they're not there. But because of this, I can no longer show emotion. So you co-founded. a company, I think you're still there, Elasticity, and you give your title as jerk.
Yes, well,
so
I am.
You're the head, I don't know if you're the head jerk or a co-jerk, but what is Elasticity? What do you do there?
It's a marketing and advertising firm based in St. Louis with offices around the country.
You co-founded this, right?
With two other guys, and we're still going strong 15 years later.
Do they hate you?
Totally.
So, but then the band, this has turned into something because it started as you said, just sort of a hobby because you were bitter that your kids were playing piano.
Yep.
And now you've got a real release with a real single and everything. You worked with a very notable producer.
Yeah, this is actually our third record, but this is the first time we worked with a producer of note in this manner. Yeah.
What was the change like going from your first two releases to working with Greg D. Griffith? And can you thumbnail some of his credits for me?
Yeah. So we had our first EP we did with a guy named Adam Hoskins, who's a really pretty accomplished musician himself, but he's based in St. Louis at a local studio.
Uh-huh.
Our second album was a live album. But then about a year and a half ago, Greg, who I had interviewed on my music podcast, The Loadout, and had gotten to know through music circles, he reached out to me and he said, "Hey, I'm getting my schedule set. I really think you guys have something."
So he reached out to you based on an interview you did.
Yeah, he reached out to me based on conversations that he and I had had together. And Greg has worked with he's actually toured with Alanis Morissette, with the Allman Brothers. He's recorded people like. He works with one half of the Indigo Girls. He records her. He is the producer for her solo albums. Amy, I can't recall her last name right now. So he's got
Amy Ray.
Yeah. Yes, Amy Ray, who's a superb musician.
Yes, of course.
And so Greg's a very accomplished guy. He's also a very good musician in his own right. He's got a couple excellent records that he's cut for himself,
right?
But he reached out and he said, I'd like to record you. And I knew from the conversations we had had in the past that he really understood us.
Yeah.
And that's important between a producer and a band, that you have a good understanding of one another and where you're kind of going and what you want to sound like.
I can only imagine. I mean, the broadest stroke comparison I can think of is George Martin and the Beatles, who they would come in with ideas and he would make them sound the way they sounded in their head. And you have to understand what's going on there to make that happen. But he had a sort of an innate feeling. He understood you what based on the interview, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had heard, you know, he had seen videos of us playing. He had heard past recordings. And I just felt like, I think he thought we could be more.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg's based in New York and he has a studio in Bristol, Connecticut. So we all went up there for about 5 days and we had,
can you show me on the doll where he touched you?
Special places.
Yeah, I know. He understood, didn't he?
He understood. He understood where I like to be gently rubbed and massaged.
Well, that's how you get the best music.
Yeah, it is. Because it really helps your vocals.
It does. It does. But that is now when you went to your bandmates. How many in your band? Four.
We have four. There's two additional, actually three additional musicians on the record. But
I know you brought
four.
On a keyboard player, right?
Greg actually found him. He's a Grammy nominated pianist out of Nashville named Jimmy Wallace. He's pretty terrific.
Yeah. It's so you go in there and you're talking to your bandmates, your mates, as they say, and you say, hey, we're going to go to Connecticut and cut an album. What is their reaction? Are they gung-ho or are they like, is this the right thing? How do they do? Because this is obviously a connection you made. How do you spring it on them?
Yeah, lots of blank stares at first and like, hey, do we all want to go broke at the same time or just you? But no, I think we were ready to cut a new record. And as I mentioned, you know, we kind of had two in the can and we felt like we have a lot of material because I'm a prolific writer. I just write and write and write and write. Mm-hmm. And I've always got a new song here or there. And honestly, the second we got out of the studio, I wrote six more songs that we're already playing. But we had plenty of songs to play. And we had a group of songs that we knew we believed would make a really terrific record. And we feel great about the entire experience.
And the producer happy with the results? How was he easy to work with? And how was it different working with him? Because, for example, I'm babbling for a moment. But when you do a live album, you go, you sound check, you record it. And there's not a lot you can do in post-production to change it. So essentially, the band produced the second album. Or the second release, right? Because it's live. So when you go in and you're putting your musicality in the hands of this gentleman and Greg is listening to you and offering suggestions, how did it work? How was it different? And did you like it better or was it a trade-off?
So Greg and I knew one another, but we didn't really know one another. And in this, when you go to his, it's a compound. And it's a 20-acre compound that has a home and a recording studio. And you're all staying together in the home.
Yeah.
And then you get up early in the morning at, you know, ODAR, not ODAR 30, but you get up, you know, we're in the recording studio every morning at 9 and we're there probably until 9 at night.
Right.
And so you're spending a lot of time. And it is a one-room studio that actually doesn't have any kind of vocal sound booth or drum, you know, sound for drums. It's a one room studio. So
that's
you have to,
so cool because you can hear that in the record. There's a certain amount of, there's a liveness to it that I can equate almost to, and I hate making references like I'm 1,000 years old, but when Phil Spector would record before he shot That Nice Lady, he would do all the stuff in
the wall
one
of sound,
room, the wall of sound. And it's sort of combined. And so I guess that would involve strategic miking, of course, but also it must make you feel very cohesive as a band.
So interesting point you bring up. We've talked about it since, and Greg said that next time he wants to record us live, in this case, we actually recorded singular instrument by instrument. You start with drums so that you can kind of get the time down.
Right.
And everything is based on the timing of the drums. So it actually tends to go a little more slowly. but still, to your point, we came out of this so much tighter as a band because you're listening acutely to one another, probably closer than you've ever done so before. Because
right,
you're
of
sitting
course.
There through every groove, through every riff, every move. And then what Greg does is, one, you know, Greg's got to make sure he's recording it from every angle and getting every nuance of the sound. But then he's suggesting little twists and turns because, you know, within each composition, sometimes it might be a melody. Sometimes it might be just a turn of a vocal phrase that he's suggesting I make a twist to.
Yeah.
And his tutelage was really terrific. And what was great about Greg is he's just a pro. He's an absolute professional, and he takes what he's doing with great seriousness, unlike me, because you know that I take nothing that I do with any semblance of seriousness.
Part of the charm, part of the Aaron Parla charm.
And I'm sure at some point it probably pissed him off too.
Of course, yeah.
Because I piss everybody off that I'm here because I'm an imbecile.
This is what you do.
This is what I do. You're welcome, America.
I've done a lot of studio work, and I think a lot of times that producer, it's just having that outside view where you guys are know the songs inside and out. You play them over and over again, and suddenly you get fresh ears on at something that can take that song to the next level. When you record everyone step by step, there's always a problem, and there's always someone who can't get it right. What was the hardest part of recording this? Because you said you started with drums, so you didn't even start with a live track to then build on top of.
You know, it's a great question. Wow, I'm trying to think if we had...
If it takes you this long to answer, you were the problem.
Well, yeah, my behavior was the problem, not the musicality. No, I think, Josh, I think, honestly, I was shocked at how, I think all of us were, at how quickly we got through it. To get through 10 songs in, it was really 4 days. I stayed an extra day to do some vocal work.
Uh-huh.
But I think it was, I wouldn't say there was any problems, Josh. There was just, there was no time where we couldn't quite get it right. And in fact, on the rhythm tracks, I know that I only played each one twice and we were pretty happy with them, which shocked me. But overall, I felt like we were actually super efficient, and there weren't any of those huge like issues that we, to your point, Josh, we couldn't, because I've been in that situation two records ago where we kept not getting that.
Almost getting it. Yeah. Almost.
Yeah. But in this case, it was remarkably efficient. And I think part of that was having Greg right there with us, kind of holding our hand. And he was a great teacher and, you know, partner in this whole thing.
Curious. Well, you mentioned, I'm sorry, go ahead, helps. Josh.
Well, I was just going to say technology helps there as well, compared to when we'd have to do it on the analog tape and everything perfect, every effect perfect on one pass.
Although to hear it, it sounds, and this is not an insult, it sounds very analog-y. It's got that classic sound. I assume you recorded digitally, right?
Yeah, but it's a good point, Rob, because Greg feels like we have this kind of, he recently said that we were kind of a mix between the Replacements and the early Replacements and Reba McEntire. He feels like we have this kind of post-punk in us with this outlaw country in us and a little rock and roll. So we wanted it to be crunchy and also reflective of our live shows. And that's one thing I've been surprised at is people who have seen us play in the last 6 months have said, and now I've heard the record, have said the songs sound similar. And I'm thrilled.
That's
about
awesome.
That.
That's tough to do.
That's
too.
A hard, really hard thing to do.
I see in a couple of your reviews, they reference punk or post-punk or neo-punk in your sound. And what I was drawn to originally, I didn't hear punk originally. I certainly didn't hear Reba McEntire, although I love her sitcom. It's wonderful in reruns. But I'm just glad when I was seeing Americana and country influence, we weren't getting like Luke Bryan, you know, that sort of cookie cutter press country music. I love you and I've got a truck and a dog and all that. It's miles away from that. But yeah. Where do you see the correlation between the music of Atomic Junk Shot and the music of punk music? Say The Replacements. It's a great comparison.
Yeah, I think it's more some of the raw nature of some of the guitar work.
I see that.
We are not, none of us are, I've definitely surrounded myself with good musicians in the band. Mm-hmm. But none of us are sterling at our craft. We're good, I think. I'm probably the least good. But I think it's the raw nature of some of the guitar work in songs like Pretty Girls and Pins and Life's mm-hmm. a Bitch. It's got a real raw nature. And I think the Reba part comes from my lyrics. I think it's purely lyrical.
Yeah.
Songs like Now She Is My Ex have a real kind of honky. And I'm trying to read through the lines of what Greg's perception.
It would almost have to be lyrical because her stuff is... And I don't mean this in a bad way. It's actually a huge compliment. Her stuff is so slick that yeah. it lacks the rawness that you hear from the very first note of your album that I love. But I can see that and I love when you said you've always been a writer because, you know, we spent four formative years together in college and we were taught to write. And I love that your writing the lyrics are just a great companion to the music. It's not a usual combination when you hear music that raw and lyrics, if you'll forgive the phrase, that polished. It's a neat combination. Now, do you write music to lyrics or do you write lyrics to music when you write?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, both. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Usually I have an idea in my head and I'll give you an example. So, the song Now She Is Max, which I think has turned into one of the best songs on the record.
Right.
It is, I was driving with my wife somewhere and, I heard this Loretta Lynn song that is referenced in there. Don't Come Home Drinking with Loving on Your Mind.
Right.
And it reminded me of, really some of the kind of pain that I put my wife through as an alcoholic. We've been married almost 25 years now, and for about 19 years I was a really heavy drinker, and we dated for 6 years for that, so about 25 years I was a heavy drinker. And you know, she would get aggravated because I had tied one on and would want right. a little something something at night. And so I wrote that song in 10 minutes and then I wrote it and I'm like, I knew what I was trying to do. And I really was passionate about what I was trying to do. And so once I wrote it and I felt like I had some words, the next day I sat down and I was able to, I knew it had to have a true kind of honky tonk feel. Cause I tried to tell it with a little bit of humor.
Sure. Makes it more palatable in some ways. Yeah.
Yeah. And but still at the end of the day, it's really about my struggle with alcohol and the kind of the pain that I put my wife through for such a long time, that I was incapable of understanding. And so in that case, in a lot of songs that I write are like that, like I take these words and I'm able to quickly, cause I write very fast. So same with my pooping, same with my eating, all of it. I do it fast.
Signs of a healthy lifestyle.
It is. And but I was a, you know, I write the lyrics pretty fast. I might touch them up once or twice. Lately I've been sharing new lyrics with the band to see if they have any perspective on them. And then I wrote the music the next day, and then I kind of try to bring them together and find a melody as I'm writing it.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm doing a horrible job as a broadcaster because I'm enjoying talking to you so much. I really need to mention the fact that you're here to sell a record. The single is called Dirt Roads. The name of the album is named after the studio, right? What is the name of the album?
Yeah, Peacedale. Originally, it was going to be called Dirt Roads. And then that whole experience with Greg at Peacedale Studios, and Peacedale is kind of like a neighborhood and community in Bristol as well. That's what he named the studio for.
I see.
And it was just such a moving experience for us as a band that we decided we really collectively, we decided that we would shift it from dirt roads to that.
I love it. I think that is so cool. And obviously a nice tribute to the man who helped you get the record made. Where can they buy it? Where can folks get this? I know it's on Spotify, but can they buy, are there physical media copies they can purchase?
So initially we were going to do vinyl, and it's actually too long. Vinyl has to be 44 minutes max.
Not the first time I've heard that.
And so we just did purely digital, because I don't know anyone that has a CD player anymore. So anywhere you stream.
I do.
Oh, good.
And a record player and all that stuff. But do you think that in the future it could come out maybe with as a record and an EP? I would think, as a musician coming from the era that we both came from, a vinyl release would be like just about the top of the heap for you. That would be pretty cool, huh?
It would be pretty terrific. I would love to have a vinyl version of it, but that would mean I'd probably have to take one or two songs off it. And I guess I felt like that wouldn't be true to the entire collection. Now, to your point, at some point I might, or...
You can do what Stevie did. He threw an extra 45 in Songs of the Key of Life to get all the music in there. I'm just saying.
We could also put together a compilation if anyone listened to our music, but nobody does, so we can't justify a compilation.
That might be the 45, the greatest hits, or the greatest hit.
It's kind of like that leaflet of famous Jewish athletes that I was in an Airplane.
I remember that. So the band is Atomic Junk Shot. The new single is Dirt Roads. I wish I could play it in its entirety. Thank you, Facebook. And Peacedale is the album. Can they get it, obviously, on your streaming services? Is it available at aaronperlett.com?
It's not. It's only available anywhere you stream. So Spotify, Pandora, Apple Music, Amazon, anywhere you stream. I believe even YouTube is streaming full records now. You can find it. And if you go to our website, atomicjunkshot.com, actually, you can stream it there as well.
And because I'm a classy guy, I'm not going to ask how you got the name of your band. That's where we're going to leave it there. I love the album, folks. I think it's really cool that Aaron took the time to come in and talk with us and give us a little bit of behind the scenes of what it's like to make an album in these modern days, because it ain't like it used to be. I love the fact that your story kind of parallels an older route of getting an album made. You're a struggling band and a producer called you. I mean, how great is that? Do you feel lucky that that's how it worked out?
I feel fortunate. Anytime anyone has an interest in our music, I feel fortunate, because honestly, there's so many good musicians out there, so many. And today, with the proliferation of digital media, they can be more easily heard. So just to simply break through some of that noise and have someone appreciate what you're doing.
I love it.
It's a real honor. And I hate people. The word gratitude and grateful has become way overused. And
I think it agitates
me, because I think most people that say that don't mean it. But I'm really just trying to make myself look cool, because I don't believe it deep down in myself. But I do truly, like, it's amazing when someone just, like, they listen to a song and they like it, and they it's remarkable to me.
I don't want this to sound shallow or insincere, but I'm proud of you. It is so cool that someone I've known for so long has taken a major step, even a leap, towards making a dream come true. The band is Atomic Junk Shot. The song is Dirt Roads, and the album is Peacedale. And you're going to love it, folks. And Aaron, you're going to stick around and do the rest of the show, right?
Gladly.
I love it. So, folks, we're going to take a small break, and when we come back, really pressing and exciting news stories of the day. We're going to get them all covered. Just say goodbye to all the news guys. I think I'm going to become an anchor. That's what Joyce would want. She would want me to focus on my news reading skills.
I'm not a newsman. I'm a DJ.
Oh, she hated that. We'll be right back.
The latest bonus show is a salute to the great American vacation the class Mr. October displayed, along with an appreciation for Donald Sutherland.
Everybody takes their flipping vacations at the exact same time.
I do mine on January 6th.
Oh, the great Norman. He is a golfer extraordinaire.
He said, we're going to go to the diner and eat hamburgers. We'll go where we're wanted.
Yeah, I didn't know leaning back was a problem.
Boners and farts are funny, Mike. Boners and farts bought my house.
One of the things I f***ing love about the f***ing bonus show is that I can cuss.
Try an individual episode or sign up for a monthly subscription and start laughing today. Get the funny at MikeOmeraShow.com.
I'm not joking. This is my job.
Just so you know, one of our professors in college said something about being a newsman, and I said, I'm not a newsman, I'm a disc jockey. And it didn't land well. Just say that. For most of us, summer means spending as much time out.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? The man is a force. He is still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. But what's mind-blowing is that he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than the guys half his age. It is all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and down it. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Rob, you're liking it, right?
Yeah, I'm taking it. Robert's taking it. We both love it. And as someone who loves lemonade, it does taste like strawberry lemonade. Every day I take it, my digestion is smoother. I have energy. I feel younger. It's great stuff.
Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/TMOS for up to 44% off your regular priced order. And remember, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/TMOS today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Side as we can. We put sunscreen on to protect our skin. But what about our hair? What about it? Make sure your hair is as ready as you are with Nutrafol. Nutrafol's hair growth supplements are physician-formulated using 100% drug-free ingredients. Their patented technology provides consistent, reliable results without compromising your sex life. Look out. It's so easy. Purchase online. No prescriptions or doctor's visits are required. Free shipping and automated deliveries will ensure you never miss a day. You can see results in 3 to 6 months. I have seen this work, and it is the real deal. So don't delay. Call Nutrafol. It's the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement brand, with over 100 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair and less shedding. Take the first step towards achieving your healthcare goals. And for a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com/men and enter the promo code TMOS. Find out why 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com/men. Spell that Nutrafol.com/men, promo code TMOS. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code TMOS. News. Two quick items up top I want to mention is, I should have mentioned this yesterday, Ernie Keaton, a great listener of the show and a friend of the show and a man who has come out to many live appearances. And he always just came up to me and he said, hey, buddy, we're friends. Good guy. Recognized him right away. He lost his battle with cancer over the weekend. And they posted that on Facebook. And I wanted all of the O'Mara family to know about that. And his Facebook page is still up. I guess it's being run by someone in his family or a close friend. If you want to offer condolences, I think that would be really nice because he is a superb, nice guy and he will be missed. Also, I want to do a thanks to a name we haven't said in a while, Matt Ponyboy Bloom, who helped us with a small internet crisis yesterday. Josh, yeah. What happened? Yeah.
If anyone noticed, the website stopped working yesterday.
Yeah, what's so, with that?
Yeah. No need to get into the technical stuff, but a quick call to Pony and he got it straightened out for us.
He's a very wise man and we appreciate it. And good guy to have on our team. All right. Aaron, this is a heartbreaker. You know that Pat has left Wheel of Fortune, right? And yes. I know you're a wheel watcher, aren't you?
I am actually a Seacrest forever, but
well, the problem is Vanna was supposed to stay on for another year.
Yeah.
But apparently she's not hitting it off with Ryan Seacrest. They're not clicking. And she may leave because she says, quote, it's just so difficult to do this without Pat Sajak.
I got 14 words for you. Chuck Woolery.
That's two words. And how hard is it really to go? You know, in the old days, she used to have to flip the letters. There was some physicality to it. Now she just touches or even points. I don't know. Is Ryan, do you think Ryan's a problem? I think he would probably be pretty easy to work with because he does everything.
But so, but she's being upstaged.
He's a delightful. True. He is she a delightful French kisser. That is true. I know that for a fact. He's a delightful French kisser.
I heard he kisses well from all countries. Name a country, like a Venezuelan kiss, Ryan can do it. He can do
Guatemalan. He's on top of it.
I was really looking at Vanna lately, and I think the problem is she's got a really big head. And Merv Griffin always said, if you want to be on TV, you need a big head. And when you see her with Ryan, Ryan looks like a tiny head. And so it's not, and we're used to seeing Ryan. So when we see them together, she looks like she's got an issue. And maybe it's just they can't be seen together. I don't know.
It's also just a generational thing.
You think?
He's the generation, probably two generations behind her in coming maybe, up on television.
Maybe three. Vanna's been there a long time. We're keeping Vanna in the long shots now. We think it's best, but I don't know. And if Vanna leaves, do you think they will replace her with another letter girl? Because doesn't that seem a little old-fashioned?
No, they'll go with AI or something.
Oh, a robot? Yeah. I don't know. I haven't watched The Price is Right since they put in the male models. Doesn't sit well with me. I'm uneasy with that. The hotel, this is some more, there is some wonderful, wonderful agenda setting here. The hotel bartender says Justin Timberlake only had one martini, but he's unidentified. So,
and how much was that tip that came 2 days later?
I was going to say just enough time for him to pay off the bartender to say it. He was obviously hammered if you saw the mugshot, that's not one martini eyes. And also, I imagine Justin Timberlake probably has a bit of a tolerance.
Well, also, you know, there's also pre-gaming. Don't ever forget that, because what about before he got there?
That's right. You know, you're right. He could have been pre-gaming.
Or from a different bartender.
But at that bar, he said, nope, I only served him one. But they said there was also people that said, watch him if he's going to drive. So I think the pre-gaming thing is the proper answer. He probably had a few drinks.
Or the size of the glass.
Or the edibles that he was packing, the 20 milligrams that he was packing with himself. So who knows?
Who knows? It could be a host of things. But I like the idea of pre-gaming and a martini served in a 20-ounce Pilsner glass with half a jar of olives in it. You know,
another
you have to
good
make
French
the ratio.
Kisser, by the way. Another
really?
Exceptional, yeah.
I think they learn from each other. Okay, swoosh. And now a new feature on the Mike O'Mara Show. Where are they now? A very famous individual in show business, Bubbles. Do you remember Michael Jackson's chimp?
Yes, we shared a steak once.
There was a joke. An old joke. I won't get into it, but the punchline is blowing bubbles. That's just the punchline. Tune in later if you want the setup. Amazingly, Bubbles is now 41. I don't know why I think that's funny. 41-year-old chimp. Chimps usually live to about the age of 60. He's in a habitat for chimps. I'm sorry, the Center for Great Apes in Wachula, Florida. Of course, the monkey ends up in Florida, where all the good news stories happen. And they say he weighs 180 pounds, and he plays and has good-humored interactions with other chimps in the cage.
Wait. 180 pounds? Is he bench pressing every day? Is it like a prison yard? Where
probably.
Like,
I would think so. Yeah, they're playing baseball.
He's got like a free weight bench that he's like, and he's got like a bandana on, and he's walking. He's kind of like, you know, snapping his fingers.
Prison tattoos.
Oh my
god. He's the only chimpanzee with a teardrop tattoo on his face.
And he's with Grape Ape?
He gets along well with Oopsie, Boma, Ripley, Kadua, and Striker. He doesn't show any signs of past abuse, which I think is great. Did you know that Michael Jackson fans still send him presents? They send him coconuts, mangoes, and blankets because he loves to snuggle. And people at the retreat say that they play him music, but he doesn't have any special reaction to Michael Jackson music. So I guess that relationship is in his rearview mirror. Well, but I like the idea of him being.
Isn't he in the news because he's writing a tell-all?
No, he's not writing a tell-all. That's not why we do Where Are They Now? We do it to keep you up to date.
Josh, you're actually correct. He's doing it in Braille, though. It's only in Braille.
I think it's actually a get fit book. Because if you can be 41 and still weigh a tight 180.
180?
Yeah.
He's a chimp.
I know.
I recall him sitting on Michael's lap like every other young man was.
Well, Michael had to give him away when he reached adult status because there's a rule that he couldn't have an adult chimp. So that's when he sent him to the
Great Babe.
Yeah, and the family took care of him. God bless his
Hello.
Heart. That's not what I wanted. I wanted this. Now, speaking of controlling the narrative, Will Smith is dipping his toe back into being acceptable after the slap. He has been sort of away from public eye since the slap, but this Sunday night, he will perform a brand new song at the BET Awards. He will do it live on stage, and I think this is his test to get back into, I don't know, the mainstream and see if people have forgotten. And it's weird. It's been a while since he's done a music right?
Right, but he did just have the new Bad Boys sequel come out, and that got pretty good response.
Not
for me. It
did
well at the box office.
There's going to be a lot of people performing. It's 8 p.m. this Sunday, the BET Awards. You're going to see Glorilla, Ice Spice, Latto, Lauryn Hill, Muni Long, Sexy Red, Shaboozy, Tyla, and Victoria Monet. All guest artists on the album Peacedale. So check that out. Are you going to be at the BET Awards? Are you not presenting this year, Aaron?
I'm performing. I'm not presenting.
That makes sense. Hollywood Walk of Fame is honoring two people that they say are well overdue. Horror legends John Carpenter and Robert Englund. Do you know either of them?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, John Carpenter, great director. Robert Englund was?
Freddy Krueger.
Exactly. Carpenter, writer-director of Halloween, The Fog, The Thing, Escape from Darkness, etc. Robert Englund, of course. Nightmare on Elm Street. Other stars that will be honored this year. And also, remember, it's not so much of an honor to get a Hollywood star because really all you have to do is come up with the cash and have a name. But other people getting a star, Prince, Jane Fonda, who probably should have had one by now, Jessica Chastain, Colin Farrell, Emilio Estevez, Fran Drescher, Lauren Graham, Bill Nye, Sherry Shepherd, and Trey Parker and Matt Stone, Fantasia, Depeche Mode, the B-52s, Green Day, George Strait, and Keith Urban, among others. So they're just handing them out left and right.
Yeah, that's a
Team
lot.
America. Team
yeah.
America.
And I didn't realize this. This put me on a little bit of a bunny hole thing on eBay, on Google rather. I'm sorry. The mayor of Hollywood, the honorary mayor of Hollywood, I always remember showing up at the star ceremonies, and they haven't had one. Did you know that right now Hollywood is without an honorary mayor? No wonder the place is in an uproar. They can't get anything done. Their previous mayor was Johnny Grant, but here are some other honorary mayors of Hollywood that you may not know. Monty Hall, Lawrence Welk, Steve Allen, Charlton Heston, Lawrence Welk again, twice the mayor of Hollywood, Art Linkletter, and of course, Betty White. All of these people keeping the crime down in Hollywood because they're the honorary mayors. There's no payment for it. It's just they show up and do events. So
right.
There you go.
And no one wants especially your name attached now.
I don't know. I would take it, wouldn't you? Mayor of Hollywood, honorary mayor of Hollywood.
Well, especially when you mentioned keeping crime down, Charlton Heston, because you couldn't pull until his cold, dead hands. You can't pull my gun out of my
Well, I've seen him on TV. He can turn a stick into a snake. He's a very talented man. Eddie Murphy seems to be at the top of everyone's mind today because he has shared that there will be a Shrek 5 and an exclusive spinoff featuring only Donkey. He's going to do two movies for the company. I'm excited about the Donkey movie. I think that's great. But it's been nearly 25 years since the Shrek franchise started. And he said when the Puss in Boots sequel came out, quote, "Donkey is funnier than Puss in Boots. I mean, I love Puss in Boots, but he ain't funny as the donkey." So we'll get to have a whole movie on the donkey. There was an internet rumor that Donkey was a kid that was turned into a donkey by going to Pleasure Island from Pinocchio. Do you think they'll play out this plot line?
No. It's two different options. That's Disney. This is DreamWorks.
Well, but so, you know what? Pinocchio is in Shrek, and I believe it's fallen under, I think it's under public domain now.
Is it public domain now?
I think so, yeah. So we'll see what happens.
I'm actually, you know, Eddie's got the new Beverly Hills Cop coming out as well in July 3rd, I believe, on Netflix. But I'm actually just glad to see Mike Myers working, because I'm assuming he will be Shrek, and we just never see him anymore.
Yeah, he had a weird run. He did that sort of fake Canadian cop show that was really expensive to make, and then no one watched it. And then before that, do you remember he invented a fake game show host?
Yes, and he was also the record executive in the Freddie Mercury movie.
That's right.
He was terrific, and he was terrific in that. But it seems like his cachet has really, you just don't see him as much as we used to. Like, I guess with Wayne's World and I loved the Austin Powers movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
have you ever heard him do recently a long form interview, Mike Myers? He is so understated and quiet. It's almost like he's sort of lost his zest. I don't know. I love Mike Myers. I thought he's done some of the greatest things that we've seen, and he was the absolute creme de la cream of that era of Saturday Night Live. But we're just not seeing him be himself, and I don't think he needs to hide under outfits, which is what he seems to be doing lately.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm just glad he'll be back doing something, because obviously he'll be in front of that Shrek 5.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay, good for him. Yay, Mike Myers. In Missouri, this is a sort of a St. Louis thing because it's Missouri. You are joining us from Missouri, Aaron. A new record. There are Missouri sisters. There are five of them. And their combined ages have the world's biggest total. They combined ages 571 years old, 298 days. They're all still alive. And there's six sisters, forgive me. Their ages, 101, 98, 97, 94, 90, and 88. Great old lady names, too. Elma, Margaret, Doris, Maxine, Lorene, Norma, and good news, Aaron, they're all single.
Where are they, and can I get their address?
They're in Farmington, Missouri.
Ah,
do you know
Farmington?
This?
Yeah, yeah, it's about, I think, an hour and a half from St. Louis, just straight south.
Well, if you'll be heading straight south. Then,
I will be getting on my three-wheeled bicycle and rolling.
They had a brother, Stanley Overall Jr., who died in 2003 at age 81, which is tragedy.
Because he had to deal with all of those women.
It's probably true. Okay.
More than anything else, I'm just happy this state will be known for something more than meth capital and herpes capital. So that's good.
Well, I chose today's kicker, Aaron, with you in mind. This is an actual St. Louis story. St. Louis County, Missouri, a week after being released from jail for sex offenses. Do you know where Spanish Lake is?
Yes.
A Spanish Lake man is accused of having sex with a seat on a Metrolink train. Is that like your subway?
Yeah. I don't know. Why is this story? This is, I call that a Tuesday.
The courts have also ordered him to not be allowed on the train if he makes bond. So if he's out and on his own, he's not allowed to get back on the train, which I think is nice.
I'm going to have to try that.
No, don't, because the St. Louis County prosecutors on Thursday charged him with first-degree sexual misconduct. He is currently confined to the county jail on a $20,000 cash-only bond. When asked for comment, the Metrolink seat says he wants to take it slow, but promised not to see other furniture. Thank you.
You're welcome, America.
You are welcome, America. The appropriate pause and the appropriate laugh. That's why it's fun to have Aaron here today. We're going to come back. We'll do a little more stuff. And you are listening to The Mike O'Mara Show. We're joined by Aaron Perlett, lead singer of Atomic Junk Shot. Buy his album, Peacedale, and buy two of them. Bonus, bonus, bonus. Josh, it's a great time to get involved on that bonus show train.
The website's back up. You can get it now.
These are truly the golden years. We are continuing to maximize your bonus show experience because easier access means more fun, and fun is the best thing to have. The bonus show is now available on a monthly basis. That's great. But now you can also buy it a la carte on a single episode basis. So that's nice. Just remember, you go to MikeOmaraShow.com and it's all there, baby. Plus, and this is cool, we now offer commercial-free subscription options for an ad-free experience on The Daily Show. Imagine, right now, if you were listening to the commercial-free experience, you wouldn't even be hearing me. Isn't that wild? It's like a time machine. Grab it and purify your TMOS experience. I wrote that. Check it out. We now offer classic BotMos if you subscribe to the feed as well. BotMos, of course, means the best of The Mike O'Mara Show. A couple episodes every week we put up of old stuff, stuff that you haven't heard literally in years. So check that out. That's a great feed. It just pops up in your subscription. If you have any problems, you need issues or assistance, call Josh or email support at MikeOmaraShow.com. For more details, just visit the bonus show tab at MikeOmaraShow.com. Or, and this is a great option, call Mike O'Mara at his vacation location. He misses you, and he would love to hear your voice. And he's up to date on all that stuff. So just call Mike. He will help you figure it out. Now, Josh, you're back. I just want to briefly say thank you for joining us from, you are in New Jersey, yes?
I am in New Jersey, yes.
What exit?
I don't know. I follow the GPS.
Oh, you just follow the GPS?
Actually, you know what? I avoided the turnpike because I went to Rehoboth, Delaware over the weekend.
Oh, how was that?
That was nice to go back after many, many years.
Maybe the hottest weekend in 10 years and you're at the beach. Was it sizzling?
I was at the beach. You know, I left Florida to go to the beach.
That's good. You go from one heat dome to another.
Right, right. So spent less than 24 hours there, but it was allowed me to avoid the turnpike in Pennsylvania.
That's nice. So you made it up to the camp. How are things at the camp? And you should explain to Aaron what the camp is and why you're such a good guy.
I'm at a middle school church camp that I do at the end of every June. So I'm up here running sound, shooting video, and it's going well.
Good.
I missed the key video shot this morning because no one told me the schedule changed. But it's
what was the key video shot?
A drone shot of like where all the campers get together for a photo, and I bring the drone in.
That's fine. No one really wanted to see that anyway.
No, all the kids
are changing
lined
the We're changing the presentation this year.
Right. So
okay.
But it's going well.
That's good. Well, we're glad to have you. And thank you to also our listeners who have been very indulgent in our schedule bopping around this week. We'll be streaming live at 11 for the next 2 days, and we actually can stick to that. So 11 Eastern. Now, another reason I wanted Aaron to join us on the show today, we're joined by Aaron Perlett, lead singer, rhythm guitarist of Atomic Junk Shot. Their new album, Peacedale, is available where all albums are digitally available. Is when I went through my liver issues and was diagnosed as someone who could no longer drink, and I realized by all definitions I was an alcoholic. So many people reached out in many ways, but the first person that called me on the phone and offered support, and I hadn't talked to you voice to voice in years, and I was just sitting in my office and the phone rang. I did not recognize the number. I picked it up because I'm danger boy. I love to take risks. And it was Aaron. And he offered me some really kind words and some amazing advice. And he was so open and understanding. And through that whole journey that I'm still on, it's one of the more meaningful moments that someone took the time to do that. And I want to take this moment just to say thank you, because it meant a lot to me.
You're welcome, man. And I think probably like anybody else that knows you, I have great love in my heart for you. And, when I saw you had been struggling with some things, I wanted to pick up and actually speak to you. I didn't want to just read some words on Facebook. I wanted to talk to you about whatever was going on. And it was important for me to do that. So I'm glad that it touched you. My goal in its entirety was simply just to speak with you and connect with you because I care about you.
Well, that worked, but it was also one of the most, really one of the most selfless and wonderful gestures anyone has done. And I think about it often. And if you know somebody, anyone who's within the sound of my voice, if you know someone who's going through something, it's very nice to send them a text. It's very clever to send them something on Facebook, but the sound of their voice, and if you take the moment to call them, I think they're really going to appreciate it. And it meant a lot to me. And you've written things that I've read about sobriety, and you address the issues on the album, as you discussed earlier. What has been, if I can ask, and I know you talk about it, but I don't want to ask something I shouldn't be asking. What has been the hardest part for you staying sober for as long as you have? Because you predate me. And I know that it comes in waves. There are days that I want to break that streak, and there are days that it doesn't even occur to me. Is it still tough for you?
It's not. One thing I've learned is that everyone's relationship with a substance or situation that they're trying to extract them from is different. So my experience with alcohol is different than yours, different than any other alcoholics. Mm-hmm. Quitting drinking was not the hard part for me.
Okay.
I quit cold turkey on, I believe it was November 22nd, 2018. And
Thanksgiving time?
Yep. It was actually Thanksgiving day. I told my wife I was done, and she kind of snickered at me and gave me one of those yeah, right looks.
Yeah.
It was when you strip away the alcohol or whatever substance it is, you're kind of left looking in the mirror at the ugliness that is left behind. And if there's one thing that I've learned from my wife, as she's a medical practitioner, is that you don't treat the symptom. You know, you treat the cause.
That makes
sense. So I had to look at myself and say, what has caused me to drink like a fish since I was 14, 15 years old?
Right.
And so I spent a lot of time thinking about what drove me to do that. And ultimately, it's this incredible insecurity that I've had since I was a kid that drove this social anxiety in me, but social anxiety in a different way than most people think about it. Most people think about social anxiety in terms of they don't like to be in big groups.
Right.
For me, it was, and you've seen me do this, when I get in front of a group, you know, I don't slowly make my way in. I rip my shirt off, start teasing my nipples, and, you know, I want everyone to see me. Mm-hmm. And I used alcohol as a way to kind of, you know, when we're kids and you're in high school, like you're 15, you're like, if you have access to alcohol, people, you know, those kids are like, oh, cool, let's do it.
Right on.
And then when people are drinking around you, you want to drink the most because that's what makes you cool.
Yep.
And in my case, what I found was that it did the exact opposite. It made people think that I was a buffoon.
Yeah.
And
but you don't realize it at the time.
You don't. That's the problem. You don't realize it.
That's
all.
The problem. Yeah.
And so about a year after I quit drinking, my wife and I talked quite a bit about it, and we talked about some of the other symptomatic episodes I had had in my life. And initially we thought it might be depression. So I talked to some doctors about it. And then it ultimately got diagnosed as anxiety. I was medicated for it. And so the two things combined, quitting alcohol and then addressing the underlying symptom that was driving the use of alcohol, those two things have been monumentally transformative in my life, and have given me far more perspective. And, you know, the only thing I'm left with, and I try to move past, but it's just so much harder than it's very difficult, is the regret that I have of the pain that I've caused people, the my children that I wish I had quit when they were, you know, 10 years prior. So maybe when they were like 4, 5, 6 years old, so that I could have been more present.
I am not to interrupt here, but I just went through the same thing exactly on Father's Day, when it should be a day of celebration and thinking about the accomplishments you've had as a dad and your kids celebrate you. I withdrew. I thought about how I've screwed up, and it was hard. It's because I don't have any problem taking the shots for stuff that I've done to myself. Obviously, my health has been compromised. I've bounced back pretty well, not 100%, but I'm doing okay. And that's okay. I did that to me. I deserve that. But if I hurt my kids, or, and you mentioned that there are mentions on it on the album, Peace Tale from Atomic Junk Shot, which is available at all streaming services, that when you do and you look back and the way it's affected others, that's the heartbreak. That really is. Yeah.
And what's really challenging is that I don't even know how that's going to affect my kids. They might. There's a song that I wrote on our first record called Scars from the Start. And it's about the reality that the scars that we obtain when we're young, that we might get them from nurture, we might get them from nature, and they affect us and they scar us for life. And you can only hope to kind of winnow down those scars a little bit, you know, slowly, and work through them. And so I know that at some point I will see through my children's behavior the effect of what I have done, because, and they had to experience.
Right.
But I might not see it today. I might not see it tomorrow, but I might see it 10, 15 years from now. And that makes me, that's heartbreaking for me.
I so understand. And I keep our fingers crossed, my fingers crossed for both of us. I just remember back in college, and this is 30 some years ago, you always were so impressive to me. I think you were the most telegenic person in our class, and it was always fun to see what you came up with as far as projects and packages and doing all that nonsense TV stuff that we thought was going to make us all $1 million. But I'm so happy that you've made this album. I'm so happy that you landed on your feet. I'm so happy that we're both dry. And I think that, you know, our kids are, they're a product of us. And hopefully that helps them understand what we went through. And it's not, you know what, I'll take a scar. I just don't want any permanent damage. That's it.
Yeah, I try to be very open with them, with anyone who wants to talk about it, but particularly with my kids about what I went through. And I don't try to tell them that they shouldn't drink or they shouldn't do something, because honestly, like, my wife still has a glass of wine a night.
So she's a villain. She's a villain.
Yeah, she's the worst person to play, but she can do that.
She can do it
and stop. Mm-hmm. And I dislike when I see people that they're trying to deal with something and they have to affect everyone in their orbit,
mm-hmm.
because to me, that's a very selfish approach to managing the challenges that you're dealing with.
Right.
Just because I can't drink doesn't mean that my wife or my 21-year-old son or my parents or anyone around me shouldn't be able to.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. Clear. Doesn't bother me to have it around me at all. But anyway, good luck to us both. And this has been one of the more serious episodes of the Mike O'Mara Show, but I'm so glad you opened up and you shared that. And we went into this. I didn't even ask you until right before we hit record, can we approach this topic? And you're like, yeah, let's do it. It's the album's got mentions on it and everything. So thank you for being open. And thank you to everyone listening for indulging in this on-air therapy session, which I think we've done very well. So we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to do the flip side, and we're going to call it a day. Thank you, Aaron Perlett from the band Atomic Junkshot, and their album is Peace Tale. Buy it, won't you? When we come back, the flip side, right here on the Mike O'Mara Show. So much sun out there. Do you want to protect your ink? Are you tattooed, Aaron? Do you have a tattoo? Look at you. See? Rocker. He's a rocker with a tattoo. Then what you need is Mad Rabbit. And it'll stop that stuff from fading. You spent, what, at least $20 getting all that work done. You don't want to waste that money.
17, but yes.
17. It was a Groupon. Mad Rabbit creates simple, effective, and natural products that help improve and preserve tattoos, all delivered directly to your door. It was founded by two buddies who love tattoos. Their hero product, the Tattoo Balm, revitalizes, replenishes, and preserves tattoo ink with natural and clean ingredients. And it's effective on both new and old tattoos and all skin types. My daughter really just looks like a pincushion. But she preserves all of her tattoos with Mad Rabbit. It's so nice. She'll get a new tattoo, and I'll sense some thin connection between me and the tattoo. I'll say, did you get that for me? No. Mm-hmm. No, never.
I just wish the packaging had a photo of Hervé Velichez on it more than I did.
If they had put Mad Rabbit on Hervé Velichez, he'd still be with us. It would have preserved that tattoo. Now is the time to try out Mad Rabbit. Yes, Josh?
I'm using the sunscreen all this week.
You
up
should.
Here, up here at the beach.
Yeah.
Oh, it works great.
Oh, great. Yeah. So be like Josh. Now is the time to try out Mad Rabbit. They've preserved over 3 million tattoos, and they've got an exclusive offer just for our listeners. If you go to madrabbit.com/TMOS25, that's TMOS25. Remember, that's a new one for the promo code. You'll receive 25% off. Pay attention. It's a different code. 25% off when you head to madrabbit.com/TMOS25 and use our promo code TMOS25. Get yourself all inked up. You're going to look good.
Hello.
Upside down. Roll over. Rolling, rolling, rolling. Let me roll it.
Flip, flop, and fly.
The flip side.
All right, welcome to the flip side. Some tapes to play for you here. Mike O'Mara, I play this in his honor. He did an out-of-town zang for this, as the Panthers are your Stanley Cup champion winners.
Florida trying to end it up against the wall, which would be fitting. 3 seconds to go. The Florida Panthers have won the Stanley Cup.
I'm no great sports guy, but I love that horn they play. I love it, love it, love it. And I'm glad that Canada lost. I don't care about Florida winning. I just like the Canada, Edmonton lost. Are you a hockey guy, Aaron?
It's always fun to see a celebration.
It is. Aaron, are you a hockey guy?
I wasn't until one of my sons started playing. And I always followed the Capitals growing up.
Sure.
But now I've become a hockey guy because of my son who still plays in college.
It's great. It's fun. And Mike will say the same thing. It is the perfect length to attend a sporting event. It's not going to take forever. It's a great, great sport to watch. And of course, I can know if you can see this. This is my family and Ovechkin right there. Ta-da. Got to show him to my son. And my son is now interning for Monumental Sports. So we are, by law, forced to support the Capitals and the Wizards.
And that was 30 years.
Don't get me going on the. And how could you call them? You got to call them by their Christian name, the Bullets. They are not the Wizards. Oh. Is not a real name. I'm sorry, but they're, when they picked that new name, this is how you knew it was a farce, because the Sea Dogs were in the Final Four, and at that point, I'm like, this isn't real.
Yeah,
and the Wizards are the worst name in professional sports, and that. Ted Leonsis needs to hire this guy as his GM to rebuild the basketball program. You're welcome, America.
Ted said he couldn't because he didn't want to take you away from your music.
I could do both.
You're multitask? Okay. Have you ever been a victim of porch piracy?
Sure.
I have never had anything stolen. I confirmed with Carrie. But this is the greatest porch pirate capture on a webcam I've seen. I guess it's like one of those surveillance cams, a Ring cam or whatever.
Yeah, like a Ring cam.
Look how fast this happens after the package is dropped off. It was an iPhone, by the way. Okay, here's the delivery guy coming up. Pay attention, stage right, to that flower pot. Okay, he puts the phone down. He says that it's been delivered.
Good beer.
Two guys.
No.
This isn't real. This
that
is staged.
Had to be, oh, that was staged.
I don't know.
For it.
That was too obvious. No,
I loved it. I think
because the FedEx driver couldn't have not seen those guys, and he just kept walking.
Oh, I'm sure FedEx drivers have been told to ignore porch pirates. Not my problem, because they don't want to get in a fight.
My favorite thing about the porch pirate was the one that he was going to attack with a flower pot.
That was conveniently empty.
Well, but there was two of them. I think it's real. You know what? I'm the most skeptical person in the world, but I hope that's real for the people of Pennsylvania. They deserve a little something. Let's doff our cap to the people of Pennsylvania. And let's close. Thank you, Aaron. I appreciate it. Now, let us close with this. This week, Jimmy Kimmel is on vacation, and in a very smart move, he's not doing reruns. He's bringing in Martin Short to host the show. I love Martin Short, and last night he gave us a new interview from Jiminy Glick talking to former Saturday Night Live guy, star of Barry, Bill Hader. And Jiminy Glick works best when the guest just plays it straight, a la Bill Hader. This is so great.
What's Barry about?
It's about a hitman. I play a hitman named Barry who wants to be an actor.
I've been mad at HBO, though.
Well, why is that?
Since they canceled Arliss. I mean, why did you cancel Arliss? I loved Arliss. And I thought HBO. What's your big deal? You're canceling Arliss and putting on... No offense, Barry. Barry. Didn't make any sense.
So check that out in its entirety. It's wonderful. What can I say but the utmost and sincere thanks to my buddy Aaron Perlett from the band Atomic Junk Shot. Remember, their album is Peacedale. Their new single is Dirt Roads. And he's a lovely, lovely person, and I love him. Thank you, Aaron, for coming on the show today. Appreciate
it. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
It's ditto, kiddo. We'll be back tomorrow with a little cake and cookie surprise. I think you will enjoy it. But thank you for listening today. As I said, a little serious, but some stuff I wanted to talk about. Love you guys out there as well. Thank you, Josh, for making the schedule. And we will see you tomorrow. So long, everybody.
Want more? Make sure you check out the Mike O'Mara Bonus Show. Get it at MikeOMaraShow.com.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.